3, 2, 1 This is Well Met with Rushab and Kyle.
Hello,
guest starring Nick Pernsteiner again.
Yep.
Glad to have this guy back. Mm-hmm. Anyways, this episode will focus on another topic. Violence and obscenity in video games will be our topic for this episode. But first, we want to talk about, you know, what's going on in our lives in terms of video games and the news right now. So we'll start with Kyle here. What have you been playing, bro?
I'd just like to start off by saying that there's really not much new news recently, which is why we're going through the whole life story of
gaming thing.
But I mean, that's sort
of, we know you don't care, so
right. Well, and like E3's on the way, and we'll get all our delicious news there. So I'm playing a few things. I've been going pretty hard at Demon's Souls, going back
after
thoroughly enjoying it and Dark Souls. I was just like, you know what? I want to play some Demon's Souls, so I'm doing that. It's good. Working on my dex build. I'm also rocking some Steam games. Got that Monaco.
Per usual, I just want to note that Kyle spends most of his income, his surplus income, which is pretty much nothing.
No, it's standby income, not just surplus.
All of his
Steam games,
money, period.
Mm-hmm. When I get money, I just, like, shovel it to Valve. Like, here you go. Have all of it.
Yep. Just want to let you guys know for
your own purposes. I have a problem.
Yeah.
But regardless,
The cheap games.
Yeah. Monaco, y'all should buy it. We got to play it sometime.
You should give it to
me. You've
only
been talking about it for the past, like,
yeah, I know, because it's good.
Gift me that game, and
it's
I will play
good.
It.
Yeah, gift me that game, too.
I don't have extra copies.
Well, you can
buy them for me, gift it, you know. I'm not going
to
play unless you pay
to be fair, you owe Nick a lot of money, so.
You do owe me about $100, which should be lots of copies of Monaco.
I'll get that to you on the first.
I'm glad, audience, you're enjoying all
which
this.
Which
is, this
right
is,
now.
This is important.
Yes. right, so Monaco, I'm playing that. Super fun. I picked up Fez because I'm without an Xbox 360, so it finally came out to Steam. I was like, sweet, I'm gonna get up all on that, and I'm enjoying it. I think I'm enjoying it more than I have enjoyed any Mario game, which is sacrilege, I know, but I'm not a huge Mario Brothers fan.
What?
Mario Bros. Is great back in the day. It's just kind of
still great.
It's kind of like meh to me now.
Continuously great.
Right now.
It's still like, I mean, it's just they don't innovate because they know they don't need to, which is the problem that I have for the series.
No, they had a lot of innovation. Something like that Paper Mario was weird, and never actually played
that. That was like 10 years ago. You realize that, right?
I haven't
been innovation.
I haven't been.
That was like 10 years ago.
Yeah,
I just
well,
said
Super Mario Galaxies in space. That's pretty innovative. And
anyway,
like
we're gonna move
Galaxy
on.
Galaxy 2. He was also in space.
Well, there was some stuff with the Galaxy series that was like messing with.
Yeah, it got really. I mean, they always get good reviews because they're fun games.
That was Universe, wasn't it? It was a Galaxy 2.
Yeah, it's not disc
no, it
games
was,
not being fun. They're
Super
all
Mario
fun
Universe,
games.
Wasn't it?
No, it was Galaxy 2.
Was it? All
right. Yeah. Right. So Fez, and I just bought a game called The Swapper, which is getting good reviews. It's a really, I don't know. I haven't played much of it. It's a puzzle game. It involves cloning yourself, and you can zip around, hence named Swap. You swap yourself with a clone.
Fantastic.
Well, no, it's pretty cool, because, like, all the...
I didn't ask you to explain it to me.
Oh, I'm going to explain it to you. All the environments are, like, the developers, like, made physical environments, and then just took photos of them, and was like, all right, this is... Like, this is going to be the actual game environment, and, like, they're actually physical environments, and then they just put in the little guy that moves around. So, like,
all the backgrounds are sort of rendering photos of this set, this model that is actually created in the real world, so it has this very like tangible feeling to it.
Yes.
It's good.
That was me not caring for a few minutes.
Right.
Heard that.
Because Richard does not care about video games.
Yeah, I mean,
speaking of, like, what have you been playing recently?
Anyways, speaking of that, have not been playing too many video games. I've been busy. Been getting ready for the law school and also working.
The law
but
school?
But I have been playing... Yeah,
law school.
School.
Law school.
LOL school?
Going to law
yeah.
school.
Yeah,
yeah,
law school.
Learn how to law.
Learn that law.
I'm teaching other... I was teaching underprivileged inner-city children how
to appreciate
law,
the cat videos.
Yeah.
We start by watching Miley Cyrus' movie, LOL.
Yeah.
And then from there, we just kill ourselves.
Yeah, how to laugh.
It's ritualistic suicide at a mass level.
No, you have to laugh at the... Learn to laugh at the cosmic joke. And...
yeah. I've been playing Hotline Miami, to be fair.
Oh, yeah.
Wait, you've been playing Hotline Miami?
I've been playing half level, then losing, then stopping.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yep.
Yeah.
I've been playing Civ, though.
Ooh.
Love Civ.
True. Truth.
Civ 5. Great game. If you love not real strategy games, which I also love StarCraft 2. Have not been playing enough of the StarCraft 2 recently, but
right.
Civ 5, great game.
Yeah.
Anyways, moving on from that.
Nick, what are you been playing?
Turns out I haven't played a game, and it's Super Hexagon. I'm actually playing that right now.
God damn it, Nick.
Oh, Super Hexagon!
You motherfucking son
of a
bitch! We just
yeah.
told you not to play that
I'm
game.
I'm playing Super Hexagon.
Yeah, unfortunately, Nick is playing Super Hexagon right now.
Oh yeah, this is the tutorial level.
What's weird is that Nick is not the only person I know of who's like super into Super Hexagon.
Yeah,
but
it's not good.
He's still adamant about playing.
Who's
it
into
during
Super
the
Hexagon?
Podcast. Just
it?
Like
is it sad,
yeah,
sad Jaka.
Who else?
No, just like news outlets and such.
Okay,
like
well,
it's actually
I mean, like real people and not people who suck.
I was gonna say, where are
oh.
all these? Where are these other people at? They beat Super Hexagon
oh.
honest yet?
Yeah. Right.
I don't
so
know. This computer board is messed up.
Yeah, but Nick, we just saw you migrate literally every one of the humble indie bundles
yes.
to a single.
I have 10 of them now, and I have played probably 5 of those games.
So now you own. A lot of things.
I own many games.
Yes.
There's a lot of good games that are like Osmos or whatever.
Osmos?
Yeah.
Like yeah, yeah.
World of Goo.
Right.
Yeah, Voxtron or whatever.
Right.
A lot of games I want to play but haven't.
Yeah.
Like Super Hexagon.
And on that note, let's just remember that Humble Indie Bundle is a great way for, you know, independent developers to get their games out there.
Or
so,
THQ in order to...
Yeah, I did not buy that one.
Yeah.
I bought it because it was hella cheap. But
yeah.
If you want to support video games, but want to also be really pretentious and buy really bad video games with your money, please go to Humble Indie Bundle. And,
we recommend you donate, like...
No.
Try to donate.
Bastard, I'm just
yeah,
kidding.
Yeah.
Clearly, I mean, it's a great... It's a fantastic idea, and it's working very well. And we found out that, you know, gamers are, you know, capable of being fair, you know, rational thinkers. They pay what's fair, and, you know,
yeah.
independent developers get the money. It's great.
You gotta go for the gold, like Nosh did. Just be like $5,000 in the last bundle.
Right.
Yeah. You have to outbid that every time, listeners. Do it.
Yeah. Always more than $5,000.
Always.
Please think of yourself paying for independent
the
games.
Max.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah.
The goal way.
Yeah.
Can't have that.
So,
we're gonna move to the main topic, I think.
Yeah,
no.
That's a good segue.
Yeah, our main topic, of course, is violence
yeah.
and video games. Probably the biggest thing you hear right now, anytime that video games ever come up in the news, it's always, of course, this negative topic, which is, well, it's either two things. It's either video game addiction, ruining, and contributing to obesity, which is one of them, which is an important one as well. And then there's the second one, which comes up much more often, which is, you know, violence in video games. And they come up much, you know, recently it was a big thing because the NRA tried to scapegoat video games really pathetically. In the most recent spree of school shootings.
Right.
Good for them, you know. No one believed it. But, well, except for a small town next to Sandy Hook, which had an awesome video game burning.
Mm-hmm.
In order to fight that that problem.
They needed the warmth.
They needed the warmth, yeah, quickly. Because burning CDs is great for the environment and great
yeah.
for society.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying it offends me, it's just book burning. I understand it's different. It's a different game, sort of, but...
oh, that's a joke.
Anyways.
A joke. Funny.
But at the same time, wow, that's pretty messed up, and I can't believe they did that.
Yeah.
And it's just terrible.
So you're saying it's different from book burning in that
books burn better?
Yes.
Alright.
No, it's something about burning that I won't pretend as if I'm going to get a huge audience that agrees that books are akin, I mean, that video games are akin to literature in terms of their societal importance. And to be fair, they aren't quite yet, but I think they will be. If you agree, if you disagree with me, listeners. Are you guys done?
No.
Yeah, we're done.
I'm sorry you guys had to deal with that. Anyways, I think video games are fantastic, and art, and part of the zeitgeist in a very important way. But I understand that most people do not agree with me because they are inferior to me, both intellectually, physically, and socially. But, I mean,
all right.
What can I say besides go fuck yourselves?
Yeah.
Anyways, what I'm trying to say is... You guys are great, great co-hosts.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right, well, what I'm trying to say is that...
Right.
Clearly, a balance of video games is one of the most important ways in which, you know, people access video games in the media right now.
Yes.
Anytime you think about video games, you think of, oh, Grand Theft Auto, Manhunt.
Well, yeah.
Well, I mean, you think of...
I do.
Historically.
Right now.
Games that are controversial.
You remember those Manhunt games?
Yeah. And, oh, right. Postal. Postal.
Oh, is that
game,
it?
That's the game I was thinking of.
Didn't Uwe Boll make a Postal movie?
Uwe Boll makes a lot of really fucked up movies because he's insane.
No, I'm pretty sure he made a Postal movie.
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
Look that up. I don't know if that's true.
No,
that is
I'm
true.
Pretty sure
good
he did.
Nick,
you should look it up.
And by that I mean terrible. I watched a movie he made called Rampage, which is kind of the same thing. It's pretty bad. And he's making a new one called Wall Street. He's an idiot. Movie
sucks. Gonna get some social commentary.
We'll talk about that, how the difference between violence being used for an artistic sense and violence being used as an exploitation of people wanting to see gore. Like, you know, gore porn, etc., torture porn. That's what we're going to talk about that later on. You know?
Right.
Yeah. Anyways.
You guys going to research that now?
Yeah. Right. Search up gore porn. Yeah.
Just leave a screensaver on my computer.
That's Nick furiously searching gore porn.
Anyways.
I know, I deleted Super Hexagon.
It's a sign. It's a sign.
Yes.
I'm a believer now.
Vindication.
Anyways, one of the biggest things that came up recently in video game history
yes.
is that the Supreme Court case, which you, if you paid very close attention to video games, heard of.
Well,
Brown v. Ian
Law, yeah.
Or law, yeah. It's one of the biggest First Amendment cases that's arrived in the past 5 years.
Yeah.
Brown v. EMA, the Entertainment Merchants Association, was a case that dealt with the California law allowing the state to ban certain violent video games, or at least regulate them and sale to younger people.
Right.
Anyways, it went all the way to the Supreme Court, and essentially, we have not seen violence in general being dealt with in terms of the obscenity law. Actually, let's rewind a little bit.
Ooh.
You're all familiar with the First Amendment if you live in America.
Mm-hmm.
It is the amendment which, amongst other things, guarantees the right of free speech.
Listen,
and that right,
yes, but
as according to the Constitution, has not been abridged except for in extreme cases. For example, one is a safety clause in the sense that, you know, if you yell fire in a crowded theater, it's illegal because... you're causing a panic and you're causing danger to the immediate people around you. Because, you know, if there's not actually a fire, you know, you're just causing panic and danger and damage without, you know, any reason otherwise.
You're just trolling.
You're just... Yeah.
Yeah.
And
no
trolling
one likes
in real life is not allowed.
Physical world trolling.
No one likes a troll.
Really, no one does. If you are a troll, you're not funny. Please let that be known.
You mad?
I'm mad, bro.
Alright.
Anyway,
why are you mad?
Do you even lift, bro?
I was getting pretty swole.
Oh, okay.
Right.
And it was the other one is obscenity law, which
right.
in the U.S. deals with specifically sexuality. In other countries, in Western countries even, Australia, Britain, France, it has to do with violence as well. But in America, it does not. There's a long history behind that, but it's not necessarily something we're going to get into now because that's a very complicated issue. But anyways, obscenity law is the other major way in which, you know, people who want to ban video games or at least regulate them heavily, but at the state level in the U.S. have tried to use this form of censorship that's legally acceptable in the U.S.
Right.
As a mode to essentially ban games. And that's what essentially happened in this case in terms of regulation of violent video games to minors. And they failed. In a 7-2 decision, the Supreme Court upheld video games as a protected form of speech under the Constitution, which is a great victory for video game.
We kicked
and
their free, ass.
Yeah, we fucking won. ACLU, bitches.
Yeah.
I don't actually remember if the ACLU submitted a amicus curiae brief, but I'm going to assume they did, because...
Well, we should still applaud the ACLU.
Yes, we should applaud them regardless. Yeah. Unless they oppose us on this issue, in which case, go screw themselves.
ACLU.
We don't care about the good work you do otherwise. Taking away our games.
Yeah.
But anyways, we waited one. The only two justices who dissented were Thomas and Breyer.
Right.
And one of the important takeaways is that now, for the first time in a very long time, video games are considered a protected form of speech. I won't say that the Supreme Court has upheld us as a form of art, but in certain ways they have. If you look at the argumentation they've displayed, they have gone to say that no matter how disgusting and morally reprehensible games like Postal, that have fucking urination upon torture upon death, and, you know, Grand Theft Auto, which is a game that I love, also have violence. I mean, Halo,
just pause
Call
here
Duty,
talk about how awesome
matter.
Grand Theft Auto was for like 10 minutes.
That's another podcast. When Grand Theft Auto 5 comes out, we're going to spend
Grand
six
Theft Auto
podcasts 5 cast? just talking about how amazing that game is.
Yeah,
but
we'll live cast our playing of it
because people care about it
for 60 hours.
Well, anyways, moving on.
Despite
how horrible these games can get, it's important that we defend the ability of this medium to convey, you know, true human interaction, true human experience upon people. And you feel like games like BioShock and BioShock Infinite.
Yep.
You see that? I mean, one series.
Those are good games.
Persona series, obviously.
Persona.
Some of the Final Fantasy games.
Yeah.
No, I mean, games like what was that shooter that just came out? That was pretty interesting. Didn't just come out.
Spec Ops.
Spec Ops: The Line. Yeah. Games that can be truly artistic, of any genre of video games, and it's great, you know, and it's great that we have these things. It's great that the Supreme Court has defended them.
Right.
But still, it's still a very important, huge issue in our society, whether or not we should have these horribly violent things corrupting our children. And my biggest thing, and the Supreme Court agreed obviously here, is that there's no conclusive evidence amongst academia proving that there is a link between violence in video games and violent behavior in youth or as they develop, corrupting them in a certain sense.
Yeah.
There have been a minority of studies that suggest that they do, but a larger majority that have said no, they do not. And the biggest common denominator amongst them is that they do agree that, you know, there's a certain sense of hostility that arises right after playing a violent video game, but it's very temporary and it has no effect on the long-term development of a child. And on top of that, we look at I never like anecdotal evidence that shouldn't be used as a way to determine policy on any level,
but we're going to use anecdotal
evidence. We're going to talk about anecdotal evidence. And there's been a lot of what's been kind of funny is that every time anything terrible happens in society, there's a way to scapegoat into video games. It's happened since Columbine before. And 90% of those times, go ahead and fact check me on this if you want to.
Ooh.
Look it up. It's false. Either Columbine or any other school shooting, they're always like, people are looking at it and saying, well, look at this. This kid trained himself on video games. And half the time when they look at it, or not half, but 90% of the time when they look at this thing, they found that, you know, this is just a knee-jerk reaction by society. There's no evidence to suggest that the police often back it up, but there's no evidence to suggest that this kid actually trained himself in certain video games in order to execute these shootings.
Yeah.
And it's just a bunch of crap that people use to make themselves feel better about these terrible things happening. So we can't address bigger issues, obviously, like poverty, psychological health in society, access to weapons, lack of access to health care, bullying in school. Lack of access to weapons.
Yeah.
Only thing that stops a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun, right? Right?
Yeah, you're goddamn right.
Yeah, goddamn right.
I'll be sure to censor out the god in that, too. Really. Where's the edit point? That's like, what, 2005?
but anyways.
Is this yours?
That's not my...
We're trying to find Rusham's Twitter feed.
I typed is Rusham false. I was fact checking, but then it leads to some other false Twitter account.
Mm.
Yeah,
help you mislead the truth.
Yeah. I don't really. I made a Twitter account like
someone made a parody Rusham Bhakta Twitter.
I typed in is Rusham false, and the first result is Rusham Bhakta.
Yes.
Nice.
Oh man, that's great.
Nice. But we all digress.
Yes.
Back to the topic at hand of the violence.
Yeah. And I mean, the biggest thing I'll admit to is that games do cause suicide. Not a lot of the time, but games sometimes cause suicide. And that's entirely upon games. And that's like a big thing in Korea. And Japan where, like, games are sports, essentially. Like, with StarCraft 2, people sometimes kill themselves over losing or just not remembering to eat or to play.
See, okay, when you starve yourself accidentally, I wouldn't say that's suicide.
And no, and I agree that these suicides, quote unquote, are bullshit. I mean, they aren't.
Well, if you're killing yourself over the loss of the game, that is a suicide.
Yeah, like, that's less of the time. A lot more of the time, it's that they forget to eat or go to the bathroom.
Exactly.
Which is more of just.
If there's one thing from playing The Sims, is that you just die all of a sudden.
Right.
And the problem is, like, if we're going to blame games for that sort of thing, why aren't we talking about organized sports, how much damage those do?
Ooh.
Most people, well, it's true that lots of people play football, for example. They won't let their kids play football because it messes you up for life. You ruin your body in its prime, and then that's it.
Yeah.
Or boxing, for example. And I'm not saying I hate those two sports. I'm just saying, if you're playing them at a professional level, be prepared to have it cost your health for the rest of your life. That's what it does.
Well, like, and most people...
And they die plenty of the time, too, by the way, so...
Yeah. Yeah. But that's... I feel like that's... From what I've seen, that's not usually what people are referring to when they refer to video game violence.
No, absolutely. That's what I'm saying. This is the concession I'm making. This is what sometimes happens.
Right.
But that's true of anything people get obsessed with in order because society pressures them to. And in America, that's organized sports at a physical level, and then in the East, it's video games. Yeah, StarCraft, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah.
But moving on from that.
Right.
I do agree that any form of interaction that young kids, you know, develop does affect their behavior to a certain extent, but we've seen, first of all, academics that suggest that, you know, violence doesn't translate. And because...
Long term.
And the problem is, you know, like, oh... This kid was playing a Power Rangers video game, or playing Grand Theft Auto game, and he stabbed his sister. And I'm like,
video game?
I don't know. I was actually thinking of a Power Rangers show, but this is besides the point.
Okay.
Well, it's the same thing.
Don't get my hopes up, man. I want that Power Rangers video game.
There's plenty of Power Rangers video games.
White Ranger.
Woo. Why the White Ranger? Why not the Black Ranger?
White.
Or the Yellow Ranger?
Because
Kyle is very.
It's appropriate. Black. It's appropriate to my skin color. And we all know that's how the Power Rangers work.
Yes.
They're playing all the
Rangers. Like the Green Ranger?
Green.
He was always... as someone who watched like 7 of the Power Rangers series, I will just say, shut up.
Yeah.
Moving on.
Right.
It's one of the things where I want to say I don't necessarily dismiss or think people who are against video games being sold to minors are dumb, because they're not. I just want to let you know there's a thing called the ESRB. We have a rating system, which is very effective at preventing younger kids from getting these games. And even when they do, I'll admit that it doesn't stop all kids from getting those games.
Yeah.
When they do get them...
Well, yeah, we also have legal ramifications for underage people acquiring alcohol, but that also doesn't prevent that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the problem is, like, if your kid is drinking or playing video games or smoking at such a level that affects their health... noticing as a parent, that's a problem that can be attributed to, once again, any of those things or any other problems in society. You can't necessarily just single out video games and then say, we're gonna bridge this protected form of speech, this art form, and then, of course, we'll have a separate debate on video games art, obviously, because a lot of people will be like, video games aren't art. But, anyways, you can't just abridge those things and then say, well, this is because it'll help society, if it necessarily won't. You know, and that's why it's kept under the strict scrutiny level of examination of the Supreme Court, which is the highest level of scrutiny that anything can achieve, and it's generally dealt with the Bill of Rights, obviously the first 10 amendments of the Constitution that are considered the most important to liberty in the United States. And I'm very glad that and very proud that video games are considered to be one of those things now.
That is under the strict scrutiny.
Yes, first amendment strict scrutiny. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. I don't know. There's still the whole question of how violence is actually used in games, you know, where it's not simply what ramifications it has in the outside world.
Yeah. For example, you know, I may not want to go out and kill people after playing Call of Duty for, 1,000 hours, but if all I'm doing is being a crypto-fascist white douchebag in every Call of Duty game, killing brown people who are brown, and that's where they're the bad guys, essentially. And all that, people are going to be like, well, there's storylines that back up different things. And I'm like, no, I mean, for the most part, it's white guys versus brown guys. And let's just go ahead and admit that.
for a lot of it, it's actually white guys versus Russians, which still doesn't make sense.
Yeah, and there's still brown guys that are being controlled by the Russians, because, you know, brown people can't be smart enough to be bad guys on their own, because, you know, they need thinkers, which are the Russians.
Russians.
Russians. Yeah. Anyways, the point is that what kind of damage does that do to people? And is that worth it? I say we should call upon game developers to move on from that as a consumer group. We don't necessarily need government to say you can't. I mean, it's impossible for government to regulate these really, you know, specific, you know, intricacies of video games. Like, well, this scene is a little too, you know, culturally insensitive, so you can't do this. We don't want actual regulation. I say, you know, us as a culture need to say, you know, try harder. Stop being so tacky and so pathetic with your stories. Let's demand a higher level of intelligence and, you know, intricacy from our games.
Right, and then
make them better.
It's sort of the mantra that we're echoing from last time of we're trying to. It should be voluntary change that we're inspiring. It's not like if games are protected under the First Amendment as free speech, outside of obscenity laws, outside of things that would affect the public order. You know, you really can't go into the minutia and be like, well, this No Russian level is, I don't know, particularly problematic for whatever reason.
There's a lot of hypocrisy on that level. That was a controversial. I mean, like, I had friends, I mean, I went to a particularly liberal school, and they were very offended by that level when I played it in Call of Duty. But then they play Grand Theft Auto, murder tons of people for entertainment.
Yeah.
All the time, like, oh, it's okay to kill innocent people when it's, you know, people of your own culture on the city streets, but all of a sudden when it's in the context of a terrorist attack in a airport in a random country, not random, but a foreign country,
yeah,
it's also, it's horrible and morally reprehensible. You're still gunning down innocent people,
right,
brutally. Mm. What is the difference here? And I guess, like, yeah, well, I'm a terrorist in one, and just some guy killing people in another.
Yeah, well, no.
Which is a problem, I think, in a society as a whole. I mean, we freak out over terrorist attacks, but somehow just let random mass shootings go because, oh, they're nice white kids who just had lost their way, which is kind of what Grand Theft Auto is.
Yeah. Wait. When have we let mass shootings go?
Every time. We have made no legislative attempts to block mass shootings from happening since, you know, the early ones until just now, essentially.
Oh, you mean through, like, gun regulation?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. We always let it go because we're like, well, it's just a tragedy.
Because we like our
it's
guns.
A tragedy when a white person guns down a bunch of innocent people. But when a brown person does it, it's someone you get worried about.
Right. Well, like, if... Yeah.
No, I mean, if the ideology is, you know, Islam, it was Christianity with Timothy McVeigh and anti-government sentiment with him as well. There's always an ideology behind mass killings for the most part.
Yeah.
I mean, we just freak out of the ones that are foreign because that's how we work.
Mm-hmm.
And we freak out in a really bad way. We, you know, we overreact. We shortcut our liberties for those, but not for ones that are. I mean, look at how many people die from gun violence and from poverty in this country. Those do not affect our public policy as much as one. I don't want to at all dismiss 9/11, but like 3,000 people died on that day. Millions have died as a result of these other things that I've referred to in America in a longer period of time, and even a shorter period of time every year, for example.
Yeah.
And for some reason, you know, we freak out over another one more than the other.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, various political reasons, you know, oil in the Middle East, tactical reasons we want bases in the Middle East, tactical reasons we want bases anywhere for that matter, and just our relationships going with those different countries going back, you know, 100 years. But at the same time, you know, if we can't deal with it domestically properly, why should we freak out when it comes to a foreign threat?
Yeah.
If we're going to measure it by damage to society, which is by, you know, deaths. And I guess if people say, oh, well, it's also fear. Why should a brown person blowing up someone in the Boston Marathon instill most fear as much as a white kid killing a bunch of kids in a school? I mean, it happens much more often with the white kid, and he kills a lot more people, it turns out.
Well, this isn't the
and the Boston
shooting.
Bombers were white, to be fair. Let's go out there.
Wait, what?
They were white, so.
Yeah, I guess.
Hmm.
They're from Caucasia. That's white.
Right.
That's where white people are invented.
Yeah.
Literally.
Yeah.
So. There's that.
Right. Yeah. But this isn't the domestic terrorism podcast.
No, it isn't. It's about video games.
Yeah.
Well, it ties into what we've been talking about for the most part, which is why.
Sided.
Why should we allow this so-called epidemic of violent video games instilling violent behavior, which is not true, for example? What do you
right.
believe? Even if we do believe it is true, why is it something we have to regulate and abridge our freedoms for
mm-hmm.
when we don't do the same thing with other issues?
Right.
I think once it goes back to, you know, gamer society and gamer culture being a very removed society from mainstream culture, which, as we said in our last podcast, is kind of our own fault. But at the same time, we have to put pressure on society to accept us because we do have a lot to offer.
Are you saying that society, in turn, like, because we're removed, and society sort of perceives the violence that is
within video games
promoted through? No, promoted the right word? I don't know. The violence that is depicted in...
That's a better word.
Video games. Yeah. You could make an argument that it is promoted. Like, it's fantasized.
You could. Absolutely.
Let's just say presented for now. The violence is presented in video games. Because video games are seen as something that's removed, it's seen as something that's similarly foreign. Like, is that where you're going?
Well, I mean, it's the same as any foreign culture. Atheism, atheist culture, gay culture. Anything that seems as with not part of the mainstream is easier to target and then
white
regulate.
White male, Christian, heterosexual.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The guys who are listening to this fucking podcast and thinking, brr, I hate feminazis.
Mm.
But anyways.
Mm.
No,
well, I hope the first episode scared them off.
They're probably,
yeah.
I mean, hopefully.
Unless they're rage listening. If you're rage listening, again, find Rishab's Twitter. We still haven't found it.
Yeah,
I found it.
Well,
no, you didn't. You found similar Rushabs. If you find Rushab Bhakta on Twitter, ironically, that's not me. I don't know who that guy is.
Yeah.
Not me, though.
It's not Rushab Bhakta. It's Rushab Bhakta.
Correct.
It's some other guy. We'll figure it out someday.
I'll find it.
Yeah. So if you are rage listening to this podcast, please send your death threats to Rushab somehow. Maybe Facebook. Definitely Facebook.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Hey, look, it's you.
Hey, did you find it?
Yeah, you
it's
found
the
it.
First result. Hey, now we found it.
You know that
so,
guy, Aziz Ansari? Yep, that's me.
Except with fewer friends and less fame.
We found Rishab's Twitter profile.
We found my Twitter,
yeah.
Yeah,
so apparently you can just Google his name and he pops up.
Ooh, look at that.
Yeah. So be sure to tweet at Rishab_Bhakta.
Yelling purr, I love yelling purr.
Nick right. is getting a kick from my awesome Twitter feed that
I
got updated.
I used to follow
this
all the time. I love this.
Yes. All right. Let's get our heads back in the podcast game.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I mean, honestly, I think we're kind of in agreement here on this front, so it's kind of hard to.
Yeah.
I mean,
without just being like masturbatory. Right.
That's what I'm trying to interest other of you. I mean, people have legitimate concerns about video games, and it's hard not to when you see a game, you know, where you massacre and then urinate on people,
right?
You beat hookers to death. Where
well, it's like, what to what extent can the excuse of catharsis justify something as
mm-hmm.
well? Justification is sort of maybe. I feel like some people might actually view it as like a, you know, justify this thing existing, and it's like, I guess I don't feel like that's the right way to talk about art.
And to be fair, my view on public policy is that, you know, unless there's demonstrable harm, we can't regulate.
Demonstrable.
Yeah. And the thing, what? Shut up. You
yeah.
could say either.
Not
anyways, so I'm not one of those people who's libertarian in the sense that, you know, no matter what, if a liberty is essential, you can't abridge it. I don't believe that at all.
Ooh.
But in the case of video games, there's no demonstrable evidence that it is dangerous society. Therefore, you can't regulate it. And you shouldn't, and you shouldn't want to.
Yeah.
That's just, I feel, the empirical truth to this matter.
Right.
I've played video game, violent games since I was just a kid. Very
right.
young. I can't even remember. I was probably like 11 or 12 when I played my first violent game. Maybe younger than that.
Mm-hmm.
Played Grand Theft Auto 3 when it came out. I mean, that was a long time ago. And
yeah.
it included horrible things. And you know, I have not committed any crimes.
Lately.
Well, not any, no violent crimes.
Right.
Ever in my life, and I don't think anyone else that I know who's played those games that really has.
Right.
And that's anecdotal. Once again, you shouldn't take that on face value, but once again, these studies, which you can look up on your own, you know, back that up for the most part.
Yeah.
And I think that's all the evidence we need. The Supreme Court agrees. but at the same time, I understand that this is not a closed issue.
Not an open and shut case.
This is not at all. I mean, this is an issue that we've only recently visited in jurisprudential Supreme Court history. It's only come up recently.
Right.
And it's going to come up again and again for the next 10 years. So I'm just putting it out there that we need to make sure we're looking at the evidence, the sociological and political science evidence that's out there that depicts whether or not violence is actually making society a worse place in video, in terms of how it's portrayed in video games. And then from there, decide whether or not we're going to bridge that right.
Right. Right. So we sort of beat the topic of violence in artistic expression and its relationship to, law. But, there's still the topic of violence in, violence being used as a form of artistic expression.
Yes.
How games fare on that front.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because, I have some thoughts on that.
What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah.
Any thoughts?
I do have thoughts.
Are you sure?
Well,
go ahead and express those thoughts. We have we have time. Go ahead.
Ooh. Really?
Yeah.
That was a weird beep. It's too much. It's too much violence going on in the world. World of games.
Too much killing.
Too much killing. Not enough loving.
Mm-hmm.
I've started to be really just unsatisfied with violence in games.
Mm-hmm.
Being the primary way of facilitating conflict. Because that's sort of what a game is. It's a set of challenges and obstacles that you're trying to overcome.
And violence, let's be fair, is an easy way to do that because A,
yeah.
It's instantaneous, and B, because it's a form of wish fulfillment that we can't express in real society without major consequences. And for good reason. You can't be violent in your real life without there being horrible consequences.
Right.
So we have it in video games because it's fantasy fulfillment. We can't do those things without consequences.
Yeah.
And there's that separate conversation of why is that our fantasy fulfillment, and which I would direct you to our history as a species. We have a lot of love for violence as a species. That's not true.
No, that's
and
true.
I'd rather have us play that out in a fictional sense than through the Crusades or through genocide.
We're sort of...
And let's not act as if video games help persuade, Darfur or Hotel Rwanda. No, I'm kidding. That's terrible.
Pretend you didn't hear that.
Jokes.
Hashtag jokes.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's... it's too easy, I feel like. It's too easy to just be like, alright, now, here in this Call of Duty game, yeah, it's a military sim, but, the people you're killing, it's at that point, it's basically not even killing. You're just, you're shooting out targets that are moving. It's Duck Hunt 4.0.
Is that less to do with violence in video games on mass level, more to do with Call of Duty being a lazy annual franchise which plays to the lowest common denominator of video game wish fulfillment?
Well, that's that's how most first person games have you interact with your environment. It's you're killing what's in front of you.
And
it's
to
just
be fair, that's what you should do
way.
In a first person shooter game, is it not?
No, not necessarily.
Not shit, yeah, that's a fair game.
Mirror's
that's
Edge,
shit.
Bro. Mirror's Edge.
Yeah, Mirror's Edge is...
Mirror's Edge is great. Dude,
but not necessarily a first-person shooter in that.
No, I said a first-person game.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, most things...
That's a huge difference.
No. For most things in the first-person perspective, that's how you interact with the world around you is... even in Mirror's Edge, it's how you're interacting with the world is you can kill people, but you can also... Most of the game is trying to prevent yourself from being killed,
mm-hmm.
which could be... which could be thought to be related.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it would be really interesting if we start seeing more games that try to get you to experience the world, experience the game world through lenses that aren't simply violence, that aren't simply
mm-hmm.
oh, here's this guy.
Like Dishonored, for example, it gives you the option of going through the game completely nonviolently if you want to.
Well, yeah, but even Dishonored, bases most of its,
Choking people out or shooting them with a dart to...
Right, it's still violence.
Yeah. No, absolutely. It's just not killing.
Yeah, yeah. And there are things, they're like branching paths of like...
And to be honest, a lot of the options you have to be non-violent in those are much worse than killing.
Oh, like...
getting a guy's tongue pulled out and putting him to a slave camp.
Yeah, that's what I was going
to
bring up.
I think you would have preferred death to that.
Yeah.
Moving on, what you're saying.
Right. But it would be interesting to see more like... I wrote a post about... I write blog posts about a few things, apparently. But I wrote a post about this for, like, when I was playing Skyrim way back in the day. I found it really weird that you could stroll into a camp and you're decked out in your Dragonbone armor or your Daedric armor, and a guy with leather armor is just like, come at me, bro. You know, you've encroached on my camp. I'm going to try to fight you now. You know what would be a lot more interesting is if he was like, hey, who's there? Oh, it's me, the Dovahkiin. And you'd, like, talk it out. And then he'd be like, he could not allow you entry, or you can, I don't know.
Negotiate surrender, or just not be violent in any way, because he's smart enough to know that,
right.
Hey, this is a situation which I should not be violent at all.
Right.
This guy's clearly more superior to me.
Yeah, maybe you could trade with this guy, you know?
That's the one thing I liked about the earlier Assassin's Creed games, that, you know, you kill enough guards, they just simply stop coming after you. Like, oh, no, wait. This is crazy. Why are we fighting this guy? Let's just run away now.
Right. Yeah. Right. Well, and, like, that's why I always, when I play games like Civ and such, like, I always wish the diplomacy options were a little bit more
robust. Well, to be fair, you play with me.
True.
In which case, I always go for violence.
True.
And to be honest, most people actually play Civ don't do that. It's
Ooh.
Just me that does that. So, to be fair, Civ is a game that's been criticized for not being violent enough, which is why, you know, for example, the Warlords expansion was criticized because it was too focused on military.
Yeah.
So I'd say there's, you know, like Civ that actually do focus on non-violent issues and violence. I mean, look at how hard military victories are in that game.
Yeah.
They're super hard. I'm just insane and terrible. I just stockpile nuclear weapons and militaries and attack my own allies because I'm just a jerk like that.
No,
people do not play like that. And God, I'm like, don't let that ruin the experience for you. But if you do play with me, I will kill you.
Right. So, find Rusham on Steam. And he'll kill you.
I'll kill you in Civ. That's what I do.
That's a promise.
It may take 70 hours, but I'll do it.
On a quick game.
On a quick game, it'll take 70 hours.
Yeah. Jesus.
Love Civ.
Yeah, no, like, it would be nice to see more, again, just, like, non-violent ways to interact with your environment. Like, even as we were talking about earlier, like, even Super Mario Brothers, technically it's violent. It's, you have agents that are trying to impede you, and you can either evade or you can attack in kind. And dispatch of them, it's minus the blood, minus the bullets. At the end of the day, it's still a violent interaction with the environment, and it's like, I'm not up in arms about, like, oh, we're letting our kids play these violent games. Just like, it just seems like
we've stopped being creative. We've stopped
in terms of how we
interact. That's exactly what you're saying. We don't like innovation. We do like innovation rather.
Yeah.
In how we create conflict in video games.
Right.
Which is a huge deal because look at movies.
Conflict between agents.
Yeah, exactly.
There are a lot of games that are just like, oh, your conflict is your environment. And it's And then a lot of it just comes down to exploration.
Yeah.
Like Fez, again, it's like, a lot of it's your environment. You can fall off ledges and things like that. Mm-hmm. It's your environment that is the obstacle. Whereas if you're dealing with another agent, quote unquote agent, that's in the game world,
mm-hmm.
like, that's the sort of interaction.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You can say a lot, but most video games are about killing or
yes.
about violence against other peoples or beings or entities.
Right.
And I agree. I like those games. At the same time, I don't.
Oh, I enjoy them.
I do. But
yeah.
I agree with you on that. You know, I think we have a much stronger and a much more important, a much more artistic genre of video of, you know, or rather medium if we actually tried to move outside of just killing. You know,
yeah,
as our primary form of conflict.
Right.
And what I was going to say is, what people have a problem respecting video games as a medium. On multiple levels, but one of them, which is that, you know, in every other medium, there are plenty of TV shows and plenty of movies and plenty of, you know, pieces of music that are not about killing intrinsically, Whereas, I want to say, this may be wrong, but I want to say 65 to 70% of all video games are about some level of violence against another being of some sort, some entity
right.
of some sort. It's about that.
Right.
It's about higher than that, too, if you get specific. It's just,
yeah,
we're all about killing.
Well, and there are definitely games that are not about that. Obviously.
Yeah, but that's not the point of this conversation.
Right? Yeah.
No,
there are games that are that do
miss
strive to that. Yeah, like miss.
Yeah.
But yeah, like again,
there are few and far between.
No, well, miss doesn't have you deal with agents.
Exactly.
Aside from like the very end of the game, like you're really not, and even then, you're just like picking between a few people. But yeah, there aren't any agents in this.
Even some of the most popular quote unquote non-violent games are like, you know, Portal, which you deal with robots still. You want to be violent against them, and it's
right.
less often, obviously, but still present. It's you're against your environment, but you're also against things you get to kill eventually. The final boss is always, let's kill some.
Right. Yeah.
And I'm not against that. Once again, let me be clear: I'm not against that as a part of video gaming culture. But it's like we've just stopped trying. Essentially, we've accepted this as part of all games for the most part, and said, let's just expand upon that.
And again, to be fair, there may be people who are trying to push that envelope, but like it might
they're in the minority and they're in the lack and they're in the area of video games are not funded properly.
Exactly.
And not supported by the culture.
Exactly.
So that's the point.
It seems like it'll be a very far day ahead of us it'll be a long time before we get those types of games in sort of a mainstream sense. But even if you introduce that type of, like, those alternate manners of, inter-agent interaction, that doesn't have to preclude violence.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that can just be another facet of, that can just be another facet of the gameplay. Like, I brought up Skyrim earlier, if you go back and play Daggerfall,
I expect no one to do that.
No, I know. It's free though. If you have an emulator to play MS-DOS, I still enjoy it. I still enjoy me some Daggerfall. It's so ridiculous. But if you ever do, it's just interesting because to see how the game has sort of progressed, how the series has sort of progressed from Arena to Daggerfall to Morrowind to Oblivion and to Skyrim. Like,
to be fair, most of the series has been on the violent level and not
right. Well, that's the thing. It's like it's definitely progressed towards this more action oriented. It's only about how you like. It's only about interagent violence, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and it varies in terms of how you deal with that. It's like either you go in with your sword, your axe, your bow, magic, you stealth pass.
Speechcraft is still present, but it's become less and less important.
Oh, yeah, no. Speech
is much more important in Morrowind than it is now in Skyrim.
Right, speech is
you can't get out of shit with speechcraft in
Skyrim.
Speech
is a joke in Skyrim.
Oh, yeah, it's for, like, getting discounts at stores, essentially.
Right. Whereas in Daggerfall, they don't just have speech.
Or
you
Morrowind, yeah.
Yeah, well, admittedly, have not played Morrowind as much. I'm still waiting for, like, the overhaul patch to be really great. If you go back and play Daggerfall, like, it's not just speechcraft or mercantile. They have, like, 5 or 6 different languages that you learn, like, Orcish, Daedric, or Daedrish, I don't remember what they call the language. It might just be Daedric. you could learn, you could invest points into these skills. It's a horrible idea, but the fact is that they have it there, where if you invest points in these skills, whenever you see an enemy of that corresponding type, like if you run into an orc, because like in Daggerfall you can't play as an orc. An orc is still like a monster type.
Mm-hmm.
But if you run into an orc, you like the game rolls a dice, essentially, like behind the scenes, and it sort of rolls a check against you to see if you can talk down your enemy. So if you speak Orcish and you run into an orc, the more points you have in Orcish, the higher the likelihood is that you can just make them stand down, and you've just
quelled that threat through through non-violent means. I mean, you're not actually going through like a dialogue window a la Mass Effect or anything like that, but it's sort of through the stats and through that gameplay mechanic of leveling up these language stats, it's sort of accounting for that interaction, even though it's not as lively.
Do you get experience for successfully not fighting an enemy?
If
you don't, then you still realize upon violence is the chief means in which you gain that ability.
I don't remember. I think you might, but it's still the Elder Scrolls way of gaining experience. If you gain it by using it,
mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah, that's true.
So when you are able to successfully do that, I think it does bump up your Orcish.
Okay, that's fair. That
right.
Makes sense.
And yeah, and so that just slowly but surely started to move away from hostile NPCs, and only to non-hostile NPCs, where you could, I guess sometimes you could try to stay your blade and like people would stop fighting as well, but that rarely happened.
Yeah.
And
to be fair, that's not a dumb thing because that's how real life works. We have tons of conflict in our own lives without having to kill or fight every person we meet
right.
in physical combat.
Right. It's like, what I would much rather prefer is, I would rather prefer conflict to be much more intimate.
Mm-hmm.
Intimate and affecting and engaging, rather than
in
having...
In a gay way?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're a very progressive podcast.
That's a good place to stop.
Exactly.
Yeah, but like, I'd much rather have conflict, especially in a game especially in like the Elder Scrolls series or something like that. I feel like it'd be a lot more affecting if conflict was more intimate and they didn't just like pepper the world with enemies for you to stumble upon and fight. Like,
mm-hmm.
not every wolf has to run up to you and try to attack you, or
yeah.
like not every bandit needs to try his luck against a guy who's
decked out.
Yeah, he's decked out in armor made from the bones of dragons. You
yeah.
probably shouldn't fuck with him.
Exactly.
You're gonna die. Like,
why would you assume that would be a good idea? Well, that's what, once again,
give me 15 gold.
Going back to game.
No!
Four, like, yeah, it's like, hey, you just killed like 10 of our guys. Let's just run. Let's not deal with this guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
You might think like, oh, he killed 3 of us. Maybe we've lost. You know?
Yeah, it would be really refreshing if we started seeing more. And that's the thing. I feel like even in games that do have a very large violent component, like let's say the Elder Scrolls 6 when that comes out for the next gen systems and
PC, PS4, Xbox One.
Yeah. Like whenever that comes out, it doesn't need to sacrifice having these violent interactions, but like if you actually have gameplay mechanics that allow you to sidestep that, and it probably wouldn't be as universal as like you might be able to do in the old Deus Ex games where you could like go through it entirely non-violently or what have you, but at least for some encounters, like let us talk our way out of it, or let's negotiate,
besides like a token, very hackneyed, you know, kind of wave to
no dialogue wheels, please.
Yeah, yeah. Like,
or well, not dialogue wheel, but like no
dialogue wheels are necessarily evil in some sense. But let's try to innovate, like you said.
Well, I was talking about like the Oblivion wheel.
Oblivion
wheel. Don't try to just make like a mini game out of it. Like let's actually have. Yeah, let's just more meaningful interaction, like interagent interaction that constitutes some sort of conflict that's not just violence. You know, like you're overcoming some sort of conflict that.
Exactly. If you were to create like a multi-faced environment, which like, you know, you deal with different cultures within that society. You know, sites that aren't, for example, in Imperial, you know, in the Imperial province, if you're dealing with like random orc groups. If you could have a way to interact with them in a non-violent way, you could learn a lot about the society.
Right.
Learn a lot about, you know, yourself as a result. And that most of these things, although they're in a fictional environment which these things don't necessarily directly carry over, the emotional and the, I guess, intellectual part of that, you know, interaction carry over to your real life. And they can make you a better person, or at least think harder as a person if you are able to interact in a way that isn't just kill all people who aren't like me and
right.
be awesome at the end of the game.
I will say, if... Bethesda, if you're listening, and I know you are,
I'm much more likely to stick around and try to learn about the lore of the universe of Tamriel and all this through speech rather than through logs and books and journals and things like that. Like,
those are good, but the same way, you're right. Yeah, it's just like,
yeah, it's much more captivating. Like, I still want to read the next installment of The Lusty Argonian, but
I'm waiting for the podcast version of that to come out.
Ooh, the old timey radio show.
Yeah,
The Lusty Argonian. Maybe we'll have to do that.
That's gross.
Come on, man.
Yeah.
Argonians need love too.
You all want that reptile loving?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, but it would be great to learn more about the Argonians from Argonians who are just populating the world.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe not necessarily people who are only in town. Like, let's... Maybe there are people who are, like, at a campfire.
Yeah.
Hey, you want to parlay with us?
Sure.
And you parlay with the Argonians, and then they give you a copy of The Lusty Argonian Maid.
Thanks.
There you go.
And we're not saying take out the violent option. I know a lot of you
exactly.
guys just love to just fucking kill everything. And I do that. I love that too sometimes. I always have a profile that I go through and just act like a maniac and just
right.
kill everyone for no reason. And that's fun to me. It's hilarious to
yes.
me. But at the same time, I'd like to not have to do that as well.
Right. Give me the option to not play that way.
Yeah.
Which in a lot of games, you... No, not a lot, but like in some games, you do have that option. Sometimes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Alright, well, that's just us sort of talking about violence and such. I feel like this is sort of a good natural way to wind things down. We're approaching an hour closely.
Yeah.
This is our, after a lot of, stopping, a lot of starting, a lot of re-recording, we're finally finished with episode 2. I'd like to thank my guest, Nick Pernsteiner.
Thank myself.
I'd like to thank my guest, Richard Bakta.
I'd like to thank my guest, Kyle Serafin.
Yeah.
And my guest, Nick Pernsteiner.
I will once again be thanking myself.
I'd like to thank them for getting the fuck out of this room and getting me a sandwich and a whiskey, and then getting the fuck out while I eat and drink those things.
Huh.
But
stay tuned for next week when we talk about Rushrib's alcohol addiction. And that is well met.
Have a great night, guys.